this, stroke their ego, or ask better questions. But a better method is to use elicitation. Elicitation is using indirect phrasing to make people feel like they need to speak up at that very moment. Types of elicitation include recognition and praise, complaining and sharing of negative emotions, making people correct you, self-effacement, naivete, shifting the window, provocative statements, and silence. Chapter 3. The Principle of Safety and Comfort. My friend Steve used to have a lot of trouble when meeting new people. Frankly, most were turned off by him because he tended to see matters only in black and white. He would see something that didn't comply with his narrow view of the world and be very vocal about it. He was judging people right in front of their faces and expecting them to see the light of his logic and suddenly agree with him. Needless to say, that was never going to end well, and it wasn't until a physical altercation after a comment about someone's shoe size that he realized he needed to change his ways. Steve was a jerk. But what was he actually doing to people? He was making them feel unsafe and uncomfortable, like they couldn't let their guards down around him lest they be judged. This principle is about making people feel comfortable and safe with you. Liking arises only when feelings of familiarity and comfort are present, and you can kickstart the process of being liked by focusing on building feelings of trust, reliability, and overall safety. Steve made sure that people's guards and defenses were always up, so we want to create the opposite effect. People just need to feel like they can be themselves around you. The lowest hanging fruit for us to start with is feelings of negativity and how to cope with them. Negative emotion management. We all feel negative emotions. The difference between someone who is likable and someone who is not is how we deal with these emotions. Whatever the circumstances, if you are outwardly angry, sullen, or irritable, people will avoid you in the fear that you will be their next target. That's the feeling of lack of safety. People won't feel comfortable being themselves around you if you are constantly upset, overly critical, hateful, or volatile. This isn't about hiding your emotions necessarily, or even faking them, but if our goal is to make people feel comfortable around us, you can't be a ticking time bomb that people won't feel comfortable around because they don't know when you will blow up. It's like being around someone throwing a tantrum or not handling conflict well. You have to manage your negative emotions in a way where you can still express yourself, but not send people running for the shelter. People have to know that whatever happens to you stays with you, and you won't punish others for something they were not involved in. First, be nice whenever negativity occurs. Sounds simple enough. The situation is likely tense enough that you shouldn't be making it worse by injecting your emotions into it. When someone is wrong, don't rub it in his or her face. It is unnecessary and only serves your ego. Making someone feel wrong in front of people causes unnecessary tension and strife. The person you humiliate will forever resent you. In the same vein, avoid criticizing someone too much and acting like you are better than them or pointing out their flaws or mistakes around others. Criticism hits hard, so you should only use the bare minimum to make your point understood. When you are right and someone else is wrong, give that individual a face-saving way to carry out your wishes with a minimum of embarrassment and humiliation. Instead of asserting your right to be right, ask people for their advice on the next steps to rectify mistakes. That allows them to be part of the discussion-making process and not just the butt of a joke. Make them feel safe to be wrong and show flaws around you. When it comes to you being in the wrong, it has the potential to go just as badly. This typically happens when you become defensive when receiving criticism. This is your ego and sense of pride at work. Try to be gracious about it, apologize if necessary, and listen rather than defend. Again, you want to make people feel safe in bringing you their unfiltered thoughts, even if that paints you in a negative light. Don't take out your negative feelings like anger, jealousy, sullenness, or resentment on others. Feel them and express them, but the difference is that you shouldn't allow them to affect how you interact with others in any way. You want to minimalize the negative emotions you project because your feelings are not anyone else's problem. If you are in a poor mood, don't act in a way to put others into the same mood. The easiest way to minimize these feelings is to divert them. Let go of thoughts that hurt you, because when you think negative thoughts, you can't help but fixate and you lower your own mood. If even for a second, your feelings flash across your face, even if you don't intend for them to. So limit the bad thinking and think more positive thoughts. Focus on what is good in life and what you are grateful for. Everyone faces hardships in life. Yet some people are still lovable and a joy to be around when they are at their lowest moments. This is because they can manage their negative emotions effectively and even productively. To harp on the same theme, you want to impart feelings of safety that people can be negative with you. If we can assume that 50% of the world's topics are negative by nature, this opens up a whole range of topics and emotions that people can explore with you. Again, of course, bad events will have a negative effect on you. It is naive to assume that you won't ever be hurt or disturbed by the bad things that can happen in life. Feel your emotions and express them, but don't have them affect your interactions or take your emotions out on others. You will creep people out if you have no normal reactions to life. For example, if you were to lose your job, you want to act sad and let your grief or horror show. Negative emotion management makes people feel safe around you and feel confident that you aren't going to attack. It makes you predictable in a good way, where people know they can expect only positivity from you and that you are someone they can turn to for support and cheer. In this way, you can become more reliable and dependable for people, and that's always quite likable. Appear transparent. Transparency is a quality where you appear like you are not hiding anything. Honest and trustworthy is the impression you want to give. You want to appear as if you are who you are saying you are, without ulterior motives lurking beneath your smile. This can be hard to do even if you don't have anything to hide. The first way to accomplish this is to speak in a straightforward manner. This isn't about your enunciation or clarity of speech. It's about how forthcoming you are with information. When people ask you questions, answer directly and provide information freely. Being evasive suggests that you are hiding something, but coming out with the truth makes you appear totally honest. Information is funny in that when you present it to people, they care far less about it. In other words, people don't care about your secrets or private information unless they sense you are trying to keep it hidden. Thus, keep a clean track record of being forthcoming, and people will trust you more and more. Another way to be transparent is to emphasize equity in relationships. This means making sure that there is equity in all areas of a relationship. This doesn't just refer to one party continually treating the other to lunch. Treat others as you would want to be treated. Insist on paying back all debts and get the message across that you are not using people or looking to take advantage of them. This makes it extremely clear that you are not seeking to gain at the expense of others. You want to always be consistent in your actions and words. Don't be one person to Bob and then someone completely different to John. It is the very definition of two-faced. Don't make people wonder what lie you're telling them. Make them feel that they know the real you instead of one of your many masks. It is very disconcerting to hear that someone told you they loved fish while you heard from someone else that they hated fish. It seems like something so insignificant, but it calls into doubt how truthful they are in general. Don't be judgmental. Humans are naturally judgmental. You look at someone and you immediately form an idea about who that person is and whether or not you like that person. When someone does something, you automatically form an opinion. But being judgmental only pushes people away, at least if you express your judgment. Even if you're just judging others in front of people, who knows when you'll turn your sights onto them for judgment? Rather than pushing people away, be open-minded with the Japanese concept of wabi-sabi. While this term has no direct translation from Japanese into English, it's a term for what makes people who they are. Wabi is the quirks and glitches that people possess that separate them from everyone else. For example, someone might never match their socks. That is a unique personality identifier because it's an anomaly. Sabi is the inherent beauty of an individual that grows with life experience. Think of how beautiful an old man is as he shares a plethora of stories from a time way before you were born, gracing you with knowledge that you never previously had about that era of history. Therefore, together, wabi-sabi is about enjoying and cherishing imperfections. The roots of wabi-sabi can be traced to ancient Buddhist teachings, where embracing imperfection is seen as the first step to achieving enlightenment, or satori. Seeing into yourself and into others, and just accepting what you see without trying to change it, is the ultimate form of enlightenment. It's also a good way to become likable. An example of using this concept in real life might be trying to get to know a homeless man's story and trying to empathize with him instead of judging him for being dirty and assuming he's on the streets by his own fault. Or it might be accepting it when your friend makes a silly decision and being there for your friend through the fallout rather than judging your friend and expressing your disappointment. See a flaw or unwise decision you might judge and understand instead that it is a facet of wabi-sabi and people are just trying their best each day. After all, an Australian robotics study called To Err is Robot, How Humans Assess and Act Towards Erroneous Social Robot, found that people related more to robots that have their own unique flaws and quirks rather than perfect robots without flaws. It illustrates how quirks define and make up one's personality, making a person relatable and, ultimately, likable. Getting to know and accepting one's quirks makes you get along with the person better. No human is perfect, so learn to embrace their imperfections as part of what makes them unique. For that matter, what's your wabi-sabi? Thus, the flaws you might judge people on make them more likable than a hypothetical perfect person. Imperfection and freedom from judgment make people feel more comfortable around you because they feel allowed to be imperfect. They are more open to expressing themselves. While we should accept this in others, we must also strive to accept it in ourselves, which is what the next point discusses. Instead of being perfect and inaccessible to others, you want to be a vulnerable human. This makes you more likable because you don't intimidate others. Other people can find that more relatable and will feel more comfortable around you as a result. To be vulnerable is to admit you have flaws. Don't pretend to be perfect. Just admit and even embrace your flaws without apology. This shows both confidence and your authenticity as a person. The previous point was about not judging people on their flaws to be likable, and here, if you don't judge your own flaws harshly, you are more likable. Showing vulnerability and the ability to laugh at yourself also makes you predictable in a comforting way. In the pratfall effect, competent individuals committed a blunder or a goof, and then onlookers perceived them to be more likable and relatable. Imagine if you had a perfect boss, for example. You might not feel comfortable being yourself around him and thus don't like him as much. But when this boss goofs by spilling coffee on himself, you suddenly feel more comfortable because you realize that he is only human too. You also feel less restricted in your own actions and less pressure to be perfect. Finally, show your real emotions and don't keep a perpetual poker face. There has been research that indicates how people will like you more if you express your emotions as opposed to being emotionless. A 2016 study in Oregon videotaped people watching a fake orgasm scene, which was funny, in When Harry Met Sally, and an emotional scene, which was sad, in The Champ. One set of participants were instructed to watch these scenes without showing their emotions, while the other set was told to be as emotional as possible. Those who showed more emotion were generally rated more likable. According to the researchers, people do not pursue close relationships indiscriminately. They probably look for people who are likely to reciprocate their investments. So, when perceivers detect that someone is hiding their emotions, they may interpret that as disinterest in the things that emotional expression facilitates: closeness, social support, and interpersonal coordination. Showing real emotions is the epitome of being vulnerable, and there is real evidence that it is more likable than the alternative. Showing emotions is also the epitome of being transparent with others. Make someone's day. To be truly likable in terms of safety and comfort, you must make people feel good. People must associate you with happiness and positivity. Thankfully, this is easier to achieve than you might think. It doesn't necessarily require taking the time to go out of your way. Just strive to leave someone in a better condition than when you found them. After every interaction, ask yourself, "Did I leave this person in a better condition than I found him or her? Did I uplift, inspire, and empower him or her? Did I cheer him up? Did I make him or her to laugh? Did I give some love and support?" If you approach social interactions with this simple intention, you will always know what to do and how to create feelings of trust and comfort. You will become very likable because you actually make an effort to make others happy, and this will make others associate you with feeling good. They will want to spend more time around you since you are a genuinely caring and nice person who reaches out. A good example may be to cheer up a person who looks sad. Maybe your coworker comes in looking like she had a really rough day before her shift. Ask her what's wrong and try to comfort her. Bring her favorite lunch just to get a smile out of her. You might be the only person who takes any action to make her feel better. She will notice this, and she will appreciate it. Remember, all you wanted to do was leave this person in a better condition than before your interaction. This can be as easy as making them smile or laugh. But the point is, it's completely focused on them. That's appropriate because likability is not about you or what you gain from an interaction. If you keep in mind this intention of making people's day, it becomes crystal clear how to act to be more likable as a human being. Takeaways. This chapter is focused on being predictable, in a good way. When you're predictable in a good way, it means people feel comfortable around you and aren't worried that you are going to throw a temper tantrum on them. It allows people to feel okay with letting their guards down. The first way to create a safe and comforting presence is to learn negative emotion management. This is where you learn to deal with negativity, criticism, being wrong, and not taking things out on other people. Being transparent is another way to make people feel safe. When you're transparent, people don't feel like you're hiding something or using them for some nefarious purpose. You can create this feeling when you're relatively free with your information, not evasive, and consistent with how you present yourself to different people. Don't be judgmental. Everyone has flaws, which is a concept repeated by the Japanese theory of wabi-sabi. Imperfection is the very thing that makes something beautiful and unique. Furthermore, vulnerability has been shown to be likable and charming, as seen by the pratfall effect. Overall, just make someone's day and be intentional about it. You probably don't think this way because you're thinking about yourself most of the time. But taking in this mindset makes it extremely clear how to be more likable for others. Chapter 4. The Principle of Listening. One of my former friends, Crystal, is a horrible listener. I would say something and she would behave as if she hadn't heard a word. She was always interrupting me, or failing to acknowledge what I had said before saying what she had to say. Needless to say, I started hating talking to her. I found our conversations irritating because I felt as if there was no point in speaking. After a few of these grating conversations, I started to avoid her. I can't say I remember the last time we spoke. That's around when I met my friend Tammy. Tammy made talking fun and easy. I did not actually realize why our talks were so fun at first, but with some analysis, I realized that it was because she was actually listening and responding to me. She heard what I said instead of ignoring me to think of what she wanted to say next. She would nod her head and respond as I talked. Then she would respond when I finished. The difference between these two people lies in their listening skills. To be more likable, you must listen hard and listen well. Listening well makes others feel important, respected, and validated. In turn, they will enjoy talking to you more because they feel as if you care. There are a few simple ways that you can improve your listening skills. As a general matter, listening is not a passive activity. It's not just the act of silence and waiting. People need to know and feel that you are processing what they are saying. They also need to feel that your response is coming from somewhere thoughtful. Responsiveness. How you respond to someone is a huge part of listening. Being responsive means that you answer their questions and give them feedback. You respond to what they say emotionally, showing that you are involved in the conversation and receiving their messages to the fullest extent. Karen Wong and her colleagues from Harvard University found that there are three main components to being responsive. Following these steps helps you be a better listener. The first component is to be understanding. This is when you get an accurate understanding and perception of what the other person is expressing and their feelings. You can do this literally by saying something like, "I bet that's hard," as your friend details her recent breakup. You want people to know that you are capable of putting yourself in their shoes and knowing the emotions that are flying about at the moment. The next component is to be validating. You want to respect the other person's viewpoint. So, when you're having a political discussion with someone, you might disagree, but you should still say, "I understand why you think that, and I respect your opinion, but here's my opinion and why I disagree. I'm not saying you're wrong, I just see it from a different perspective." Validating is the feeling that someone is justified in their thoughts and is understood. You don't necessarily have to be agreed with, but heard and felt to be reasonable and respected. The final component is to be caring. This is where you express affection and concern. A good example is hugging your friend as she talks about breaking up with her boyfriend. Another example is asking, "Are you okay?" When someone talking has a run of bad luck or an upsetting ordeal, what can we do with this knowledge of optimal responsiveness? According to Wong, our conversational technique that covers all three components of responsiveness is question asking. We can make guesses about other people's feelings, but the only way to really understand is to ask. Further, the very act of asking questions implies validation for the other's point of view. And especially when we ask follow-up questions, we demonstrate that we truly care about a partner. We are responding in a way that truly shows our concern and authenticity. As expected, the people who asked lots of questions were rated as more likable than those who asked fewer questions. The researchers speculated that this was because the respondents interpreted question asking as responsiveness. In the end, we all like talking about ourselves, and conversation partners who ask lots of questions fulfill our need to self-disclose. Ironically, those who were asked lots of questions knew less about their partners, but still liked them more. There is a valuable lesson here that is key to likability in general, and it's going to be repeated throughout this book. Make it about other people, and you are on the right path. This echoes one of Dale Carnegie's more famous quotes from his seminal book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in you. Monitor. Another purpose of better listening is that you can monitor them to gain self-awareness. Other people are really a mirror for yourself because you can look at them and see how you're faring, if they like you, how well you are speaking, and how you should calibrate your behavior to get better reactions. In other words, monitor their reactions and you can see yourself and how you are doing. This helps you figure out if you should keep talking about something, if you are angering someone, or if you have touched a nerve. You can monitor your conversation and adjust it to please someone and become more likable as a result if you pay attention to feedback. Listening is not all about hearing words. It's also about monitoring other things like body language and facial expressions to gain valuable feedback about the other person's feelings. As you talk with someone, really observe him or her. Read him or her for signs that you should talk more, talk less, or stop talking altogether. You want to make sure this person doesn't appear uncomfortable. You can do this by reading the feedback this person gives you. Feedback is everywhere. Watch if they flush or tense up or relax. Watch if they seem jittery and nervous or relaxed and at ease. Watch if their smile slips, if they start to frown, or if they start to laugh. Also observe how they act around others and compare it to how they act toward you. For example, a girl who is laughing and relaxed with her friends and the waitstaff but tense and weird when she talks to you is probably uncomfortable. You should adjust your approach to help her relax and like you more. Pay attention to how a person changes from what you would consider baseline normal behavior given the circumstances. For instance, someone should be relaxed at a brunch with friends. Do their behavior or reactions differ when they speak to you? How so? This allows you to more effectively use other people as tools to monitor yourself. Monitoring, by definition, means that you are focusing your attention on the other person and looking outward rather than inward towards yourself. The theme of thinking of others first is a theme that runs deep. When you are listening, don't be formulating responses in your head and planning what you will say next. That just means a lack of listening and monitoring for valuable signals. Just listen and then respond, even if you need a couple of seconds to formulate the response. Pay attention to the words they use and the details they cite. Observe their behavior, body language, and facial expressions. All the information you need about yourself is right in front of you, reflected in the other person. Validate. One of the main purposes of listening is to validate. When you validate someone in listening, you don't need to agree with them, but you let them know that they are heard. Whatever the sentiment is, it is respected and it matters. Whatever emotion they are feeling, it is justified and its impact is to be fully felt by all. Validation is, in essence, the act of helping someone feel heard and understood. It has the power to calm fears and concerns, add a boost of joy and excitement, avoid or quickly resolve arguments, make people much more open to your advice, and much more. Imagine you tell a story about the most fun you've ever had skiing with your sister. Whoever you are talking to seems pleasant enough. They listen intently and they reply something like, "That sounds nice." But that doesn't cut it. Something seems missing. It's because it's not a validating response. You would want them to feel like they saw, understood, and shared your excitement. You wanted to evoke the same reaction in her and have a shared experience. As such, there are a host of easy ways to give validating responses versus invalidating responses. Remember that when you validate, you are accepting and sharing their emotions. For example, "That sounds so sad.
I would be so angry if I was you."
"No wonder you were confused."
"You have every right to be happy."
"I can't blame you for being sad." Notice how each of these responses refers to an emotion and shows understanding and shared impact. The opposite to these are invalidating responses, which minimize or outright dismiss someone's feelings. They may stem from the best intentions, but we all know intentions don't count. Only actions do. For example, "It's not a big deal. Don't worry."
"It could be so much worse."
"Look on the bright side."
"Trust me, you'll be fine."
"Yeah, it happens to everyone." More often than not, these types of responses actually make the situation worse. They suggest that the other person is being irrational and or shouldn't feel the way they are, the very opposite of how they're hoping to feel by talking with you. Learn to catch these responses and change them into validating ones, and you'll be surprised at the difference it makes. Validating makes you feel like you're someone's ally in life. There are 6 steps to validation according to Dr. Marshall Linehan, who created a concept called dialectical behavior therapy. 1. Be present. Don't be looking at your phone or doing something else and appearing distracted. Be totally focused on someone as they speak. 2. Summarize what you have heard. 3. Try to put yourself in someone's shoes and guess how he or she feels and thinks. Do this out loud and then ask if you are correct. 4. Think about someone's past in biology. For example, a person who has been abused might be more sensitive to criticism, so understand that when this person reacts poorly to criticism. 5. Tell someone that their emotions are normal and only natural. 6. Try to relate to someone by comparing their experiences to your own to prove that you can feel what they feel. So, for example, when someone is telling you a story about how his coworker upset him, put your phone away and pay attention. Repeat what you have heard to show you are listening. Try to imagine things from his point of view about why that coworker upset him. Consider how he was bullied in school, which could have made him more sensitive to bullying now. Tell him that his reaction is only natural, and relate how you went through the same thing yourself with a rude coworker. When a person talks, he or she wants to be seen in a certain way. He or she also wants a certain reaction. So when you focus on validation, you give them that reaction and subtly say, "Yes, I agree with you. You are that person." For example, a guy who is bragging about his car wants to hear, "Wow, your car is amazing, and I admire how much work you put into it." A writer named Paul Ford described an interesting concept. When you meet someone, ask what he or she does. Then, when the person tells you, state, "Wow, that seems hard." You should do this because most people believe their jobs are difficult. In fact, there's something difficult about everyone's job, so it's not a false belief. By acting as if you think someone's job is hard, you are relating to that person and also showing him or her that you believe just as he or she does. When you say this simple phrase, you agree with a large part of their mental chatter in a way that makes them proud. Plus, it allows people to open up, as complaining is an easy outlet. Many times throughout this book, I have mentioned how important it is to make someone feel good. This is just another form of validation, isn't it? You can accomplish this easily by listening to them and using that time to make someone feel smart and clever. Take notes as someone speaks. This makes it seem you are really hanging on every word and value what they are saying. Alternatively, tell people you are going to commit
follow through, or write down what they say at a later point. Obviously, you would only do this with valuable information, and it feels amazing being the source of such information. Also, make remarks that compliment the person. For example, if someone is talking about his most recent academic achievement, say, "Wow, that must have taken tremendous dedication to research. Good job." Pointing out a person's good qualities and complimenting them based on what they are talking about will stroke his or her ego. One way to validate someone is to seek his or her advice or input. Ask, "What do you think of these?" before you submit work. Or ask, "You seem to have things in life figured out. Maybe you could help me with my girl problems?" You may not want to bother someone, but really, people love giving advice. It makes them feel as if they are important and wise, and as if you look up to them as leaders. Bonus if you can ask for advice in something they fancy themselves to be smart in, because that is the ultimate validation of their skills and knowledge. Later, you can add to this principle by presenting evidence that you followed someone's advice. For example, let them know, "I took your advice about my girlfriend, and here's what happened. We worked out our fight, and she sent me this sweet text today." There's nothing more validating than seeing a positive outcome from advice you've given. Finally, when you take note of the smaller things in a conversation, you show how much you are paying attention. Paying attention denotes respect, and is therefore an effortless way to flatter someone. You want to remember obscure details or things like dates or personal facts. Later, bring them up again to show that you bothered to pay attention and remember. The person you are talking with will really appreciate that you care so much to listen well and feel that their words had weight. For example, even remembering something as small as someone's preference for mayonnaise on sandwiches can be impactful. When you get lunch, ask him what he wants. Interject as he communicates his order and say, "No mayonnaise, right?" Listen with intent. As a general rule of thumb, I try to listen far more than I speak. I do this because I enjoy listening to people's stories. But more importantly, I like to give others airspace in a conversation. Airspace is simply the room to speak without feeling like they're going to be cut off, interrupted, or not share what they wish to share. I find people speak more freely and eagerly when they are given airspace. In some order, here's what people enjoy about conversations: being entertained, speaking and sharing, laughing, and learning something new. Notice a pattern. If we aren't listening to something we feel has value to us, then we prefer to share about our lives and thoughts. Think about how you feel after you leave a conversation where you don't share much and the airspace was monopolized by the other person. Your neck probably hurt from all that nodding, and you felt as if you'd just left a lecture. You felt neglected. Now, imagine a scenario where you were given all the airspace you could possibly use and appeared to have a captive audience. You'll come away feeling much different, and that's the type of feeling you should attempt to impart to others by listening with intent. To become a people person, you need to listen way more than you speak. The sad truth is that it's impossible that everything out of your mouth is going to be fascinating and compelling. So let others share. They'll feel better about themselves and subsequently about you. There's a giant caveat. To be a good listener, you aren't just giving airspace and surrendering your turn to speak. A lot of people think that to be a good listener, you just need to shut up and let the other person talk. Well, to some extent that's true. There are more parts to the puzzle. That's passive listening. To the other person, it can feel as if they're speaking to a wall. Active listening is the key to giving others validation. It reads like a mouthful, but it's simple in practice. You are listening with a clear intent. Let's say someone says, Last week I was skiing, but I wasn't really having a good time. Passive listening would consist of you saying, "Oh, cool," or "Uh-huh," and only acknowledging their statement and staying silent afterwards. Active listening, and listening with intent, would consist of any of the following. "Didn't have a good time," repeating the last phrase of the person's statement. "So you went skiing, but it wasn't the best time?" Rephrasing their statement back to them. "Sounds like you were expecting a fun and active weekend, but something was wrong or missing." Sum up their thoughts and position. When you read it from a page, it sounds like you come off like a parrot or a robot. Active listening is just repeating what someone says? How does that help? It helps because people hear far more than simple repetition. They are hearing you use their own words in a new sentence, which gives the strong impression that you were listening intently. It appears that you are following their train of thought with interest. You want to make sure with crystal clarity that you understand them so that you can delve deeper. The best part of all of this is the more you do this, the more they will continue to talk and take the conversation into deeper realms. You can literally mix the three types of phrases for an hour and observe in wonder as people pour their hearts out and attempt to explain, justify, and elaborate. The intent is to crack them open like a nut and learn as much about their inner thought process as possible. People want to feel that they matter. People want to feel that what they have to say is something of consequence. That's the ultimate power of validation. Sound curious and non-judgmental, as if to ask, "Did I get this right? Please correct me if I did not." "I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to travel this summer."
"Travel this summer?"
"Yeah, I was thinking about going to Greece, but it might be too expensive."
"You want to go to Greece, minus the prices?"
"Yeah, I haven't traveled anywhere in the past few years, and I've seen so many great pictures of the Greek islands."
"That sounds like you need to get away despite the cost."
"You could be right. I mean, people are only young once, right? I've always dreamed of traveling the world, but work gets in the way."
"So work has always gotten in the way?"
This conversation could probably continue ad nauseam, but notice how all one party is doing is picking and choosing phrases to repeat so that the other party is beckoned to clarify and elaborate further. It's no wonder that this is the exact technique that psychologists use during therapy sessions to allow people to discover themselves and articulate out their inner thoughts. A few well-placed questions in the form of active listening can really crack people open and help them learn about themselves. If you're great at listening with intent, it's impossible for you to become a conversational narcissist. In most cases, when people share or want to get stuff off their chest, they're looking for a sense of validation. They're not going to get these if you are just going to sit there with a blank expression on your face. Recall that good listening demands active focus and participation. The most common kinds of emotions people are trying to elicit are excitement, shock, interest, or amusement. These are what you should validate people on. Keep these emotions in mind and make sure to reflect them back. It tells them their message is on point and well received, and it encourages them to share more. The truth is that listening more enables everything else we are trying to accomplish in this book. When you listen more, you hear feedback from others and how they truly respond to you. When you listen more, you understand people more deeply and what motivates them. When you listen more, you can see if you possess a toxic habit or two. This skill enables you to get into their world. And all it takes is for you to resist the temptation of interjecting or interrupting. In the quest to become a better people person, listening well is perhaps the most universal theme, not just according to me. Consider that the following titans of industry made it to the top of their fields not because of their inherent intellect,
but because of how they were able to work with and lead people. A clear illustration of this was made by American architect Jeff Daly some years ago. Two monologues do not make a dialogue. When you speak with someone, you must make sure that it's a two-way street. It's not a lecture or a sermon. It's an interactive dialogue where two parties collaborate to create something together. Is this what you are creating, or even seeking to create? Make sure that you are actually listening and engaging, as opposed to ceding the floor and simply waiting for your turn to speak again without acknowledging them. Often, we get the sense that we are only speaking at each other instead of with each other. If you walk away from a conversation with nothing gained or lost, this is what you've been doing. Conversations are best viewed as opportunities for learning. They can be opportunities for building bridges instead of each party attempting to show just how intelligent they are. For real dialogue to take place, you have to have an open mind regarding what you can take away from the other person as far as your own personal education is concerned. Keep an open mind. Develop a sense of curiosity. And most importantly, attempt to be less self-centered. This is how you create meaningful and healthy dialogue. Takeaways. The principle of listening well is one that you always hear or read about, but probably don't actually engage in. That's because most advice on listening is simply to listen more. That's only part of it. To listen better, you should practice your responsiveness. Listening is not a passive activity, and responsiveness is what happens after you process what you have heard. Optimal responsiveness consists of understanding, validating, and caring. The best singular way to demonstrate responsiveness is to ask questions. Listening is a fantastic method of gathering information about yourself. When you observe and monitor others, you gain self-awareness because you can understand how you are being received in multiple facets. Use other people like a mirror to see yourself. Validation is another powerful aspect of listening. Validation is when you subtly say, "I see your emotion, share it, and understand it." This is best demonstrated with validating statements, which are emotion-focused, and eliminating invalidating statements, which are incredibly common and serve to dismiss people's emotions. Finally, listen with intent to listen better. Chapter 5. The Principle of Being Valuable. When Sean moved into a new city, he was lonely because he couldn't make any new friends. No one from his work seemed to be interested in becoming friends. He invited them out from time to time, but probably not frequently or confidently enough. After 3 months, his usual weekend plans were still to spend time with his cat and working on his car. One chance conversation with a coworker uncovered the fact that Sean had a karaoke machine in his home, which he received for Christmas a few years back. Unbeknownst to Sean, everyone in the office used to be in choir and loved the prospect of recapturing their glory days through karaoke. Friday nights subsequently became known as Karaoke Night at Sean's with Sean and his cat. He quickly became integrated into the office social circle and was able to branch out his groups of friends easily from there. Where did it all start? It goes beyond the karaoke machine. It's what the karaoke machine represented. It represented some sort of value to others that incentivized them to spend time with Sean and get to know him. Without it, who knows how long Sean would have been lonely in his new city. It's not a lens we like to view relationships through, but it's plainly obvious when you take a step back. Humans are shallow. People operate on a transactional basis more than we'd like to admit. They like to exchange value and find self-benefit where they can. Put simply, if you can do something for someone, they will like you more. Being able to take part in basic transactions can help you be more likable. Of course, if a relationship hinges solely upon this value, then it becomes unhealthy. But for initial likability, when meeting people, you must determine how you can add value to their lives. It's the most basic currency we care about. Thankfully, value comes in many forms, so it's not all about having money or the ability to buy gifts. Providing value is about the positive emotions you can give people, and that's a much broader and kinder way of viewing value. If you can do something for someone or make them feel a way they want to feel, you are automatically more valuable and hence more likable. If Sean's coworkers only kept him company for his karaoke machine, that is different from the karaoke machine being the initial lure of friendship. Everyone has needs and desires, and we are usually ignorant or passive to them. The principle of being valuable is about being proactive to people's fundamental human desires. You have them too, so it's not that difficult to decipher what other people want. Is this manipulative? It might sound like you are trying to bribe other people into liking you. That's not quite accurate. You are just understanding how people function instinctually. The helpfulness habit. Adding value to people's lives is essentially being helpful. Get into the habit of thinking how you can proactively help a person to fulfill his needs or desires, both practical, like at work, and emotional, like making them feel good about themselves. People's needs or desires can be primary, or what you can see obviously on the surface, or they can be far more profound and deep, what is below the surface and emotional or psychological in nature. In the current moment, is there a need or desire someone might have that you can assist with? Probably. It can indeed be a difficult habit to develop, but needs are generally things you can provide that prevent people from feeling a negative emotion, while a desire is something you can provide to cause people to feel a positive emotion. An example of meeting someone's practical need or desire is helping someone who needs a ride to work. You can provide the ride yourself, or you can help them make arrangements for transportation. Because of you, they are able to keep their livelihood. If they have just eaten a greasy hamburger, you might grab them a couple of napkins. If you realize they haven't eaten lunch, ask if they are hungry or recommend them a restaurant. An emotional or psychological need or desire is more complex. But just understand that everyone wants to feel loved, respected, and worth something in this world. There are universal themes in what keeps us in a good mood versus a bad mood. If you see someone is eating lunch alone at work, this person may be feeling lonely and left out. He or she may feel alienated by coworkers, or may be in need for emotional support at the moment. You can make a tremendous difference by asking, "Do you want to join me for lunch?" Reach out to this person and make him or her feel wanted and accepted and fulfill the human desire for company and support. Now, you can't reasonably spend your whole life serving others. So look for 5-minute favors, things you can do in 5 minutes or less. For example, you can open a door for someone who is struggling with carrying a big box, or you can offer someone a ride on your way to work. Listen to someone for a short amount of time. Shoot someone who is having a rough day a positive text. Think about proactive ways you can help people out that are low effort and investment on your part. You can make a big difference to others without cutting into your own time and needs. They may be quick to you, but the value of the gesture will be immense, and you will cement yourself as the type of person that provides positive value with their presence alone. If you can't do it yourself, provide resources and information that will help people. This will take even less than 5 minutes, but can be of enormous help to someone. Say a person is interested in photography. You don't have to take them under your wing to teach them what you know. But who could you introduce them to that knows photography? And what resources could you curate for them? Anything that can point them in the right direction to fulfilling their needs or desires is adding value. You don't have to offer help only when people ask for it. Most people never ask for help because they are embarrassed and don't want to inconvenience others. This goes beyond offering value.
you are anticipating someone's needs and desires. You relieve him or her of the embarrassment of asking, most people's biggest obstacles, and make people's lives easier. Being intuitive makes you more understanding and likable in general. There doesn't have to be a manipulative stigma attached to adding value. You just have to understand that humans are naturally selfish and naturally gravitate towards those who can help us. It's easy to become that person for first impression purposes. Beyond being helpful, there are a number of ways you can actively add value to people's lives, even passively. Connect to people. Try to be a connector and proactively introduce people for mutually beneficial relationships. If someone needs or desires something, it's not too hard to think of someone who could help out directly or indirectly. As usual, the gesture is worth just as much as the actual connection. Strive to be the person who knows what everyone is good at and can help people make things happen. Your value in this instance is the promise of beneficial connections. There's a reason we hang around with VIPs we don't enjoy personally, because we know we might benefit in some way from being in their presence. Be the planner. Take on the role of planner. If you volunteer, it's doubtful anyone will fight you for the privilege, since it can often be a hassle. However, your value is actually quite high here. People will begin to look at you and depend on you to make things happen. It quickly becomes a position of leadership and power. Organize get-togethers. Help someone conceive a bachelor party. Plan a vacation for a group or rent out a room and throw a party. People will like you because you do the hard part and can be relied upon for social gatherings and bringing happiness into people's lives. Have specific knowledge. That way you can offer people guidance as to what they need to do. This makes you valuable because people look to you for help. This knowledge also gives you inside tips to break the rules in acceptable ways. For example, you might know about national parks, so you can help guide people on where to go and what to wear for a hike. This way you are valuable because you can help guide people about what to do. In a similar vein, have expertise on obscure issues. Know about things that others don't, so that you can be a source of information that no one else has. You might be the only person who knows how to program a computer, and then everyone will be calling on you to help them with computer troubles. If you know something obscure, you will be the only authority on the subject, and people will want to know you as a result to get help on the matter. Be entertaining. Recall that value isn't limited to things with monetary value. Value is about addressing people's needs or desires to create positive feelings. Therefore, value can be entertainment as well. In fact, it's one of the forms of value that most influence everyday friendships and relationships. You may not see eye to eye politically with your best friend, and they may borrow money from you constantly and never pay you back. But if they make you laugh and are fun to be around, their relative value is great enough to continue spending time with them. Indeed, most friendships are formed simply because people enjoy being around each other. That is value in its purest form. If I spend time with someone and I know I will be happy and laugh, I will gravitate toward them. This can take the form of compelling conversation, captivating anecdotes, humorous observations, or jokes. You don't have to be the life of the party. Being entertained is a purely subjective matter. Everyone likes different types of movies, and movies are always preferred to dry lectures because they are entertaining. Thus, entertainment as value makes you magnetic. Entertain people by focusing on them, their interests, and their lives. Entertain people by understanding and being familiar with current events so you can have an engaging and thoughtful dialogue. Further entertain them by being understanding of different histories and cultures, so you can add context into any conversation. Entertain people by giving knowledge they seek or soliciting knowledge from them and thrusting them into the pleasing role of a teacher. Entertain them by being more spontaneous, asking people hypothetical questions and being less predictable. Providing value to people by being entertaining is actually advice about how to be a better conversationalist in disguise, isn't it?
It diverges from typical conversation advice because it takes you out of the equation and asks you to focus on others and how you can prioritize their needs. When you realize that successful relationships don't begin with focusing on you and instead should be weighted towards others,